Yes, this is the ghetto. Showing up now. Oh,
it's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
And good morning, y'all. That was the Ghetto. And we're going to have a good conversation, I hope, today. A couple people from around a couple islands here. There's a movement called the Redemption, and it's about animal welfare and animal care and no-kill shelters. And I wasn't aware of such a movement being so active. So doing a visit to Kauai just recently, I was enlightened, and so I will share that with you, and we have them waiting on the line now. But pick up this show, live stream, if you want to, at kwai1080am.com or carolcox.com. Just go there, click on Listen Live, and join in and listen. And if you'd like to call, 524-1080, 524-1080. And we're just going to go to our guests now and see who's on the line. There's a number of people had committed to calling in, so we'll just start from... Carla, good morning. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Mr. Cox. How are you doing this morning?
I am fine. Feeling like I'm in the ghetto.
I like that opening song. That was good.
Life is but a ghetto.
Yes, it
we
is.
We make it to be nicer, but that's what they say it is. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and I don't have the caller ID. We don't really need it because... this is just a conversation that hopefully you can enlighten some of us out there that are in the dark on what's going on.
My name is Navahini Kahopi. I'm from the Big Island, and I am a board member of Big Island Dog Rescue, and I also have my own organization, Aola Na Ilio Moko Okeavi, Long Live the Dogs of the Big Island. And we've been working actively for about a year on changing the animal control contract that is funded by our county council, who contracts to the Hawaii Island Humane Society.
Mm-hmm.
And the changes that we're asking for are specifically to reduce the euthanasia rate on our island. Currently, about 73% of the animals that enter our shelter system are euthanized.
Mm-hmm.
That costs our taxpayers $2.1 million a year. And so far, we've had very little impact on the county council. It's kind of been a hot potato issue. It's been moved from, you know, the county council will tell us it's the Hawaii Police Department who are the managers of the contract, and the police department doesn't want to get involved in it. They tell us they're only responsible for the animal control portion of the contract. We need to deal with the Humane Society, and the Humane Society has pretty much circled the wagon and isn't working with the community right now. So we just finished our RFP review, and we gave our recommendations to the police department and the county council at that time, and we're waiting to hear back on that. So that's pretty basically what's going on. There's more to it than that, but that's the overall picture on our island.
Mm-hmm. And what is the Redemption movement? Can you give us a little background on that and tell us where its birthplace or why?
Redemption is actually the name of a book that was written by the foremost expert on no-kill sheltering.
Mm-hmm.
No-kill sheltering, people get a little thrown off by that sentence, no-kill. What it actually means is saving 90% or above of the animals that enter the shelter. So 90% live release rate, meaning animals that enter the shelter go out the front door into the homes of a family or a rescue organization rather than out the back door in a rubbish bag headed for the landfill. So that book was written by Nathan Winograd, who, as I said, is the expert nationally on no-kill sheltering. He founded the first no-kill shelter about 20 years ago, so he's been doing this for a while. Right now, there's over 300 communities nationally that have moved their shelters from having the kind of statistics that we have to having a live release rate of 90% or above. And it's very, we wouldn't be reinventing the wheel here. It's a series of 11 programs that get implemented and get worked vigorously to get that live release right up there.
Uh-huh.
So Nathan Winograd is going to be visiting our island, just a little plug for that. He'll be coming to the Big Island to give us a, to hold a conference and help our island move forward. So he'll be on the Big Island June 25th, and he'll be in Kauai June 26th.
On Kauai. Now, speaking of Kauai, I know they supposedly was going to protest a fundraiser at the Hawaiian, is it the Kauai Humane Society, is that correct?
Yes, I understand that happened yesterday.
And how did that work play out?
I'm not sure. I heard little odds and ends of it, but I haven't heard a full report on how that went. My understanding was there was a show of a portion of the Kauai Police Department there, and I think they, I don't know, from what I understand, they protected the guests and the Kauai Humane Society as they went about their fundraiser. So I don't know how many people were comfortable staying there and following up on their protest. I think it was just a handful of people because of the intimidation of the police department.
I see. So they kind of like the labor struggles. The police show up no matter what happens. They're going to run you out if you're protesting. You want better wages or whatever. But the city contracts with the Kauai Humane Society, right? City and
yes.
County?
Yes.
So, and the police department is a city and county funnel, so it was should have been expected that they would be there to protect the contract and what has been standing for a long time, and that is bring them in the front door and smoke them in the back door and dump them in the garbage or dump them in the landfills.
I think the Kauai, the Big Island has, the Big Island Hawaii Police Department manages our animal control contract, but I believe Kauai, I believe the managers of the Kauai animal control contract is the county council.
Mm-hmm. But I mean,
and I think
they get
probably Felicia or Sheila would know more about that than I do, but my understanding is that, that Kauai is managed directly by the county council.
And they get money from the county for the contract. Are they
right, about, you know, I believe, about $760,000 a year.
And are they, the Kauai Humane Society, if you know, are they deputized or have some memorandum of agreement where they can issue citations or have police authority to conduct search warrants and seizures and arrests, or do they have to have firsthand on site a police officer with the warrant and what have you?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure with Kauai. I know there is a badging process that our animal control personnel go through, but it, their scope of enforcement is limited on this island. I'm not sure what it is, what it, the process is in Kauai.
On the Big Island of Hawaii, now, how many animals is it estimated, that, let's say dogs, and then if you know about cats, that are brought in and euthanized? Do you know any of the background on that and how many and what have you?
Last year, let's see, 2015, the a little like 10,265 animals were euthanized.
That's to include dogs? Combination 6, of dogs and
182.
Okay, but is that the combination of dogs and cats, or in which species? Or
dogs, cats, mongoose, chickens. Of the last year, of the 10,000 plus animals that were euthanized, or I believe a little over 4,000 were dogs, and then around 3,000 were cats. So about 70% of the overall were cats and dogs.
What's for finding homes and what have you, how do they have a strict policy of behavior of the animals, or how is an animal submitted and evaluated before it's considered for adopting out or whatever? Is it just superficial, or do they really have a program?
I don't know and I don't want to discount the staff. I don't know how well the training program is. I know what I understand, for example, with the cats, how cats are tested for socialization. They put the cat in the kennel with another cat, and if they don't fight, they take them out, and then they put them in a kennel with another cat, and if they don't fight, they put them up for adoption. So to me, that's pretty, that isn't very...
rudimentary, basic nonsense.
Right. And any animal that you have brought into a shelter is already scared and disoriented, particularly if they're someone's companion and they've come from a home and they're in this strange environment. And they're put in with an animal, and then they're taken out of there by a stranger, and they're put in with another animal. So I don't find that to be very helpful in terms of assessing the behaviors of a cat. The other thing, particularly with cats, is that there's no holding time for cats on our island. So a cat can come in to the shelter, and they can be euthanized that day.
Really?
Where dogs, I believe, have a four-day holding period. There's not a holding period for cats. That's one of the things that we're trying to get changed on the contract.
So
that there be a seven-day holding period for any animal that comes in.
So a cat comes in the Big Island, they don't have to hold it any period. There's no regulation requiring them to hold it.
No.
What if it belongs to someone?
Well, they're chipped, that isn't, you know, most cat owners don't microchip their cats. That's more something people do with dogs. No. Well, they can come in the front door and be gone that day.
Well, there's an aggressive campaign and effort here to microchip cats and dogs, and I would think it would come with ease on the Big Island, but you're saying they don't really microchip, or do they advocate that? Microchipping cats.
Animals come into the shelter and they go up for adoption, then they're microchipped. But for an owner of a cat, or, you know, the family members of a cat, to microchip a cat has just not been as, promoted as it is to microchip your dog. Mm-hmm. It's something that's being more formalized now, but it hasn't been anything that people have done just routinely like you do when you adopt a dog.
In conversation, I was talking with a number of people involved in this effort. They suggest that the Kauai and what have you, there is an effort to, when they come across this, an animal that is stray or lost, it could be a hunting dog, they don't make an effort to really return that animal to the rightful owner, and they euthanize them. And there are some concerns that they are just doing that. I've talked to a couple of hunters who say that their dogs are being destroyed just right from when they receive them or pick them up. You know anything about that?
I don't know anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that same issue on Kauai, but that I don't know anything about.
What about Big Island? If they get an animal in, what happens?
Well, this is another issue that we have, and I think this is probably an issue nationally with shelters and what happens when an animal enters the shelter. So if you have a stray animal that is not microchipped, the shelter workers assess the animal themselves. So they decide there's categories that the animal can go in. Is the animal adoptable? Is it treatable? Is it non-rehabilitatable? And they get to decide that. So, for example, an animal could come in, and it could have a slight case of mange or something like that, something that we would think is treatable, but they don't find that to be treatable. And they're able to then go ahead and euthanize the animal because they've categorized it as an animal that is not not rehabilitatable. Mm-hmm. An older animal, a dog over 10 years old, they would consider possibly non-rehabilitatable because of its age. So there's not a regulation on any of that. The shelter workers decide those things on their own. I believe the vet techs probably do most of that. So it can vary from shelter to shelter.
Oh, wow. So
what we would consider treatable, maybe, you know, a litter of kittens that are not 8 weeks old yet or not weaned, they would consider them not rehabilitatable because they have to be bottle fed.
Mm-hmm.
They would euthanize them rather than put them out to a foster home and allow them to be bottle fed and then come back and be adopted. So there's such a range of the way that animals can be categorized. And the other thing is they can, you know, they could say, for example, this is just an example, but they could take in 30 animals that day. They could say 25 of them were not rehabilitatable, 5 of them are adoptable, therefore we're a no-kill shelter because we save all the adoptable animals. And people don't understand how that's categorized and what that means. So they could be still euthanizing the majority of animals that come in.
Mm-hmm.
And say that they're saving all the adoptable animals because they get to decide what that means.
So let me ask, and if you can't answer this, don't have anything to offer with it, it's okay. But what percentage of animals do they actually go out and capture? And then what percentage of their total numbers intake do they rely on people bringing them in? And do you know anything about that, and which one are likely to be screened and held if there are when they
so they do our shelter has to do a monthly activity report, so we do get all of those statistics. So animals that are adopted out, so just we'll just use this as an example for January of 2016, animals that were received 7,500 to date, and out of those, around 650 families redeemed them. 1,800 were adopted, and then 4,968 were euthanized. So they'll break this all down. So out of those 7,500, only 650 were returned to their owners.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe their effort, their campaigns, or to educate the public? Would you say adequate, woefully inadequate, or needing a lot of help to educate people?
Woefully, and I believe, and I'm just going to go out on a limb here, intentionally inadequate. I believe that there's intention to keep the community in the dark on all of this. As long as I've been involved in animal rescue, which has been about 10 years, but this last year has been very intensive in trying to get these policies changed, they pretty much blame the public for overpopulation at the shelter. They specifically focus on spay and neuter, but they don't do the kind of spay and neuter that we really need, the aggressive kind of spay and neuter we need on our island to be able to get the pet population under control. And that's one aspect. Spay and neuter, aggressive spay and neuter is really critical to get the population under control, but that won't stop the euthanizing.
Mm-hmm.
It won't stop that rate of euthanization. For that, we need aggressive adoption programs, and they haven't done any of that. So it's woefully inadequate, and I feel very strongly it's intentional.
Do you know the dollar amount, you may have mentioned it, that in their annual contract with the city or county, let's say Big Island, that they receive their contract dollar amount?
Can you ask me?
Do you know the amount of their contract? How much is the annual amount that the county?
Oh, $2.1 million.
$2.1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And what percentage of that is in employees and overtime, and what percentage of it goes into the actual education of people, spay neuter, educating the public of adopting and handling and containing the animals and properly microchip? Do they spend much money of the budget in that, or where does the budget go? Furniture and new offices?
The $2.1 million is specifically for animal control. It's a really vague line between the animal control. For me, it has been anyway, trying to understand how they function. And then the adoption side of it goes through a 501c3, so that's a separate entity.
Uh-huh.
The animal control contract and the $2.1 million don't have anything to do with the adoption end of it.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we have a lot of problem, because from what I understand, 70% of the overall operating budget comes from the animal control funding. Spay and neuter is, I believe they get a little over $100,000 of county money. That's included in that $2.1 million for spay and neuter. And the spay and neuter is ineffective because people have to come to the shelter at a certain time to get the coupons. They have to pay a portion. There's some coupons that are free, but there's also a lot of them that are They have to pay a portion of it, and then they have to take that spay-neuter coupon, and they have to find a veterinarian that will take it, and then there's usually a cost on top of that.
So it's cumbersome and not...
For people, it is. You know how hard it is to survive on our islands. If people have to take off of work to go get the coupon, then they have to find a vet that will take the coupon. Then they have to take the animal to the veterinarian for the surgery and come back and pick them up and then do the follow-up. So independent rescue organizations on our island, we have very strong rescue organizations on our island that are really, in my opinion, they're the experts in the field. They do these MASH units, and what they do is you sign up for the MASH unit. They come and pick up your dog or dogs. They'll take them to the clinic. They set up the clinic themselves. They have veterinarians that come in and do the surgeries for free. They have vet techs and other personnel that will monitor the dogs throughout the day, and they bring your dog back that night. They microchip them. They'll do some minor, you know, health checks, and then the spay-neuter surgery, and you get your dog back the same day, and it's free. And they do these spay-neuter MASH units in areas where there's a high percentage of stray animals or, you know, there's a lot of litters of puppies that are coming out of these areas that are more rural. And it's not exclusively there. Anybody can has access to the MASH clinics, but they're very... These rescue organizations know the communities that need the help the most, and that's where they target. And our Humane Society refuses to work with them. They won't even put them on their calendar or let their people, you know, people who come into the Humane Society know that these MASH units are being held on these weekends. I've asked them, can you at least put them on your calendar so people will know, and they haven't even done that.
So, again, what is your name of your organization, and how does one get in contact with you and by website and phone number, please?
Primarily, I work with Big Island Dog Rescue. I'm a board member, and we're on Facebook, Big Island Dog Rescue, and I also have my own educational organization, Eola Na Ilio Moku O Ke Ave. Also, you can find us on Facebook or World Wide Web. We have a website too, also.
And what is that website?
BigIslandDogRescue.com.
Okay, BigIslandDogRescue.com.
Right.
Okay. And they can make donations or comment. I think we have another caller from, maybe possibly from another island. If you want to hold on or you want to listen.
Yes, I can hold on.
Okay. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Carol. This is Sheila calling from Kauai.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. I kind of had a little bit of an interesting night last night. I took some information that I'd like to read to the listeners in a flyer form and put them on public areas around the Sheraton fundraiser for the Kauai Humane Society, which was very interesting in a lot of ways.
What was the fundraiser? Can you give us a little?
The fundraiser was their, you know, annual fundraiser for their funds to, you know, do whatever they really don't do, in my opinion. But I'd like to read this to people because it will sum up everything very short and sweet.
And what is this now you're reading? It's.
I'm reading the flyer that I put on cars at outside the fundraiser last night to tell the truth.
Okay.
About what's really going on with the Humane Society after they, you know, did their spiel. I was hearing all of it while I was putting these flyers out on the cars, and there was a few things that really disturbed me. I am kind of new to learning about all of this. I've worked throughout the years with the Humane Society on pet adoption television shows that I've created for them. But mainly what I do is I work on solutions, formulations for animals that are suffering with skin disease, and I love to find solutions to problems. So while I see all of this stuff going on, there's all these red flags while I was working with the Humane Society bringing dogs in that they just told me straight out were going to be put down, and I just saw these red flags, and it wasn't making sense. Why would they put down dogs that I bring to a Humane Society, but I wasn't paying attention at the time. Well, now, after I went to the mayor's office recently and actually got the contract between the Kauai Humane Society and the county and went over that contract and discovered, in fact, it is animal control to control the population. And how they do it, they say, is by euthanization, which euthanization by the dictionary means for only terminal radical cases. Mm-hmm. But so really what they're doing is they're killing like over 69% of the animals that are brought in there. And so I created this flyer that I'd like to read to you. It's very short, but it contains all the key points that are necessary for the community to know is the truth.
And this is a flyer you put on cars or posted on Kauai.
Yes, at the fundraiser outside, the Kauai Humane Society fundraiser. I'm blowing their cover because they're misleading the public. They are making the public believe through their facade of, you know, their pretty little animals in their cages and, you know, all this information that is, in fact, a lot not true of the programs that they say they do, but they don't. And so I have been learning along with everybody else in the community, and after getting the contract and reviewing the contract, I was completely shocked, and I have a very hard time believing that, you know, certain key personalities that are involved in the Humane Society and have been for years, you know, Ron Wiley, who stands up and, you know, says how wonderful the Humane Society is. He's married to Laura Wiley, who's been on the board of directors, the treasurer, the accountant, the president at times throughout the last 20 or more years. I know that, you know, Laura knows the contract she was working under, and she knew she was misleading the public, and so did Ron Wiley, this very public radio announcer who promotes Penny Sestero like you wouldn't believe. And all these things were making sense until I got the contract. And they're protecting their money and their contracts trying to deceive the public. So can I please read that?
Yeah, you can. Hold on. What is their dollar amount for their contract annual?
$760,000 a year.
$760,000. That's Kauai. Okay,
yes.
Go ahead with your...
And that's in this that I'm going to be reading to everybody. You'll get the gist of everything.
Mm-hmm.
This is the fundraiser flyer or the fundraiser at the Kauai Humane Society that I put on the cards to let the people know the truth so that they don't get further deceived. And this is it. What the Kauai Humane Society isn't telling you. Did you know the Kauai Humane Society gets paid by the County of Kauai $760,000 a year of taxpayers' money for quote-unquote animal control? They currently control the animal population by killing over half of the animals they take in, whether they are adoptable or not. Here's the actual portion of the contract that proves it, and it says, whereas under the provisions of Hawaii Revised Status, HRS, Section 143 to 115 and 143 to 116, the county is directed to contract with the society for the seizure and impounding of all unlicensed dogs, and for the maintenance of a shelter or pound for unlicensed dogs, and for the lost, stray, and homeless dogs, and for the destruction or disposition of seized dogs not redeemed as provided under HRS Chapter 143. That proves it. So then I go down to facts. At least half, if not more, of the dogs and puppies killed are hunting dogs. Facts. Without the hunters and the hunting dogs, the pig population would be out of control, causing great damage to homes and our island's environment. Hunting is a way of life and tradition, supplying hundreds of local families with food year-round. Win-win. Cats and kittens are killed the most. I got an estimate from somebody who works within the Humane Society. They said at least 80% of the cats and kittens are killed. The remedy is redemption for our animals, the Nathan Winograd way, with a new no-kill contract, which is proven to save the county and taxpayers' money and find homes for nearly all animals. Please support our animals, community, and environment by supporting a new no-kill contract on behalf of our animals. That would end all of this Pandora's box, all of these issues. We wouldn't need to discuss any of this anymore. It would bring in a new, refreshing board of directors, a new, refreshing executive directors. It would bring in the community. We could have petting zoos. We could have programs. We can get out there. We could have more foster. We can start doing these remedies that Nathan suggests and has 100% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
All over in rural countries, cities, and everywhere. So there's no reason why the county would refuse this kind of a contract when it saves them and the taxpayers money and places pretty much 99% of the animals. I am just as blown away by all of this after working for the Humane Society for 20 years, supporting them and their animals and finding all this out. I'm beside myself. I want to get this solution out. I want this no-kill contract to take place immediately. I want all of this to stop. And we are going to do it throughout the islands because our MOs are pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers might be different, but the same yuckiness is going on. I'm over it.
Well, let me ask you a question. Has there been other people competing for the contract?
I don't know.
Okay. Let me give you a little insight as to a development here that took place a couple of years back. We have the same issues where there's public money. People come to the trough to feed, and in our county here in Honolulu, when you got people that are corrupt and part of the elite society, and they went to Punahou and you know who at school and this and that, and you know, and so they scratch one another's back and they have this nepotism and all of that, the animal suffers. The programs, we see cat populations increasing, but we hear just talk and chocolate tuxedo candy fundraisers and all kinds of things and new buildings, but the real work is not done. So one of the things I heard in you, in your comment that I would like to pull your coattail on is that I learned that here in Honolulu, the statute was written, the Hawaii Revised Statute or Honolulu Revised Ordinance or whatever it is, stated specifically that it was the Humane Society, that the Hawaiian Humane Society, who was entitled and would receive the contract. So in by law, no one else could compete, could even put a bid in. They could put a bid in, but the law said it had to be with the Humane Society, Hawaiian Humane Society. So I approached one of our city council people here, Ms. Ann Kobayashi, and brought that to her attention, and she introduced a bill to have that language taken out. So therefore, there's an insurance policy, so to speak, in Kauai, and I don't know if it happens in Big Island, but I'd like to hear. But I would strongly urge you to move forward to change the statute or the city ordinance that specifically name the Kauai Society as being the contractor. Unless you do that, then there won't be any progress per se because the law says you have to give them the contract. And that's
kind
of stupid,
what?
Right?
The great thing is this is a very common obstacle throughout the contracts. This
mm-hmm.
is a common. The other common obstacle is that the police are part of the county and part of this contract, and that's why the police get involved in a lot of these humane issues, Humane Society issues, and that's why the community is afraid to speak out because the cops are so active in this, because
mm-hmm.
they are connected. So that's another problem. But the great thing is, what I'm very excited on and what makes my stomach feel good when I focus on it is we have Nathan Winograd himself, who is the president of the No-Kill Advisory Center,
mm-hmm.
coming to our island on June 26th to help us get to that next level. He knows all about these obstacles. He knows how to get around them. He knows how to show the county the numbers. He knows mm-hmm. how to make the changes, and he's coming here to help us, guide us to that next level. Because of what you just said, it is very challenging, but it's not impossible.
Oh, no.
And this guy is got the remedy.
I'm sure that, assure you that it's not impossible, but it's not realistic. If the law dictates that you must and you shall hire this person for the contract, all that you preach and say and struggle to change is for naught. Because
you are absolutely right, except for one major thing.
Okay.
And this is what I'm going to be working on Kauai. That once if I just got this information after working for them for 20 years
mm-hmm.
and not knowing any of this and finally discovering the truth, I'm irate. Okay, so if I feel this way, then I know if I can get across this information to our community, they will feel the same way, because I feel that most people in general have good hearts. So what needs to happen to make the change is the people need to say, we want the change. On such a large level, they withdraw their donations and everything else and dry them out. Whatever it takes, mm-hmm. the people are going to make the change. And we need to stand up against them and show them we want these changes. They work for us. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth.
Yeah. But, and again, harping on the same issue is to say specifically it's a contract between the people and the private entity, which is the Kauai Humane Society. I think they're a private entity, nonprofit. Yeah. So when the law writes and say they're the ones that the contracts will go to, that's your first start right there. So just rip that out and put the language naming no one, and then it become a competitive bid process. And you're likely to have a Winograd could come in and implement and compete for that bid. And I think that would be half of your headaches right there. But the rest of it, I don't know what the answer is, because it seemed to be, what I've learned, these things are killing machines. They get money, $760,000 you say there, and then they get great funding and donations. And what happens? We still see high number of cats and dogs
and you know
suffering.
Why, Carol? Mm-hmm. You want to know why? You're absolutely right. You're 100% right. And in the past, we didn't have this solution that we have now. We didn't have the community realizing, you know, the coconut wireless, everything is spreading fast. And I will tell you, I know for a fact, I believe in our community, I believe in our people, and I believe that once our community really knows the truth, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
Yeah, well, hold on here. Don't go away, and if I lose you, feel free to call back. And like I said, the full 2 hours, if the others listening out there and on the other islands of Maui and Kauai and Molokai, feel free to call back in and don't feel rushed. And let me try to answer this if we can. We got this fancy phone system, so hold
okay.
on. A bit too fancy.
I'm persistent. Don't worry.
Hold on. Caller, good morning. Thank you for waiting. You got a comment, a question? Hello? Hello? Well, sorry we missed you there. Go ahead with your comments. Kauai.
You want me to speak?
Go ahead.
Okay, I have to, you know, really say what has really blown me away. That while I was doing my thing last night, listening to Ron Wiley, who was saying so loudly, thank you for coming to help save the animals, I wanted to puke, because he knows the contract his wife has been working under for 20 years and been involved in as an accountant, a CPA, as the president at one time, the vice president at one time. They move them around to fit their needs at different times. It's a closed board, and that's one of the problems. We have no control over what's going on. And what disturbs me the most is that somebody like Ron Wiley, who claims to love animals so much, could really know this and be a part of the facade. And that's what made me want to puke last night, and also motivated me harder after they were taking all the things off of the cars that I put them on. I went back and put them back on.
Mm-hmm.
And it disturbed me that they took them off, because what it was the truth. And I also put them on some cars that I knew belonged to those people that I'm speaking of, so that they would know that our community will and is starting to know the truth. And, you know, things are going to be changing.
Yeah,
and
on.
He mm-hmm. should be a little bit concerned because of those pamphlets that he has been promoting Penny Sestero like she's some kind of queen, and the whole time knowing what the truth is. Yeah. That disturbs me on a very deep level.
Yeah.
Deep level.
Hold on. Hold those thoughts, Sue. Caller, good morning. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning. Oh, this is Navahini calling again.
Yeah.
I wanted to, I was interested in what you said about the Humane Society on Oahu having the ordinance specifically allowing the contract to go
They
down?
Used to until I intervene and approach the city council and say, look, you can't take the public's money and have it directly in earmarked to go to a certain party. It has to be competitive bid, RFPs and all of that, and the council agreed. And so they changed that. They just changed the language. That section, wherever it says contract, it shall be, just take the shell out and say it shall be put up for bid, and the competing bid wins.
So on our island, on the Big Island, because the Kauai Island Humane Society operates three separate shelters in different areas, the problem that we have with our contract and why no one else is able to bid for the contract is because the Humane Society, Kauai Island Humane Society, currently owns one of the shelter in Kea'au, so they own the land in the shelter. The bid specifically states that whoever is bidding for the contract has to be able to operate all three shelters. So essentially what they're saying is that whoever would want to bid on the contract would have to have a shelter available in Kea'au.
Yeah, well, read the language
so
of the...
It makes the bidding process almost impossible for another organization to come in. And
right, well, that's something...
Take over.
That's something you should do is approach your... city council or council members or whatever they're called, commissioners or whatever, and really look at that language and have that language tailored and stripped of any specific mention or person that is identified to guarantee to get the bid. It's not even a bid. It's guaranteed to get the work. That's
right, because of the way that is.
So you might want to look
at
that.
It's written specifically for our current
domain. Yeah. What I'm going to do is take a break and gather your thoughts and give me a call back because I want to talk about the real part of this and what can we do in between to manage and reduce the kill. I mean, when we see cats and we see dogs, we don't see life, you know. Most people, they just think, oh, another problem. But these are animals that they're life. We should not be so reckless with it. And we should be a little more sensitive in the programs because these fundraisers just sickens me when I go out to the parks and go different places and people are dumping cats and abandoning cats and cats. You know, that's cruelty in itself. And to have a tuxedo party and fundraiser while all of this is going on. And we'll talk about some of the people that are out there working hard and being harassed for actually feeding cats. You know, our scientists and our state agencies tend to demonize them, while in the fact the people that are real demons are the government agencies and entities that don't do their jobs. And then through hook and crookery and fancy contracts, that has to stop, in my opinion. I don't know. What are you thinking?
Absolutely. I agree. It has to be laid back on. To me, it has to be laid back onto the county council who allows it to go on.
Well, give me a call about 5 minutes or so, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in the next hour, and feel free to call back and join in, okay?
All right.
All right, and how about you, Kauai?
I'm still here. Are we done?
Yeah, but you heard what I said. Call back in about 10 minutes, so in the next hour, and we'll take it up from there, okay?
Okay.
All right, hey, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Back. Oh! take it out. I put your back down and raise your arm into the vicious heart. You got it. Keep on. He's humping, let him go. Eeny, meeny, meeny, miny, mo. Oh!
Second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me right here at KWAI 1080 AM from 9 o'clock to 11 AM on Sunday mornings. You can also catch us on podcasts at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
Prize, come home with the leaves and nation. turning into bees? Oh, when will there be a harvest for the world?
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning again, and thank you for joining the Carol Cox Show and joining me here. Harvest of the world, for the world, I should say. And we're talking animal control and humane treatment of animals and a couple of things that... We're really stuck in a quagmire here. We're really, because people suggest that they're doing certain things out of care and love for animals. And I think most of the humane societies and the humane groups that are out there running facilities, they get caught up and there's this giant job, I mean bigger than life. Because we don't manage people with the spay-neuter, we don't manage keeping certain animals in containment, we don't manage and prosecute people for abandoning animals and reckless irresponsibility or being responsible for their pets and what have you. And you're going to have one or two animals to escape, let's face it. But some of the things, there's a degree of great degree of dishonesty in this industry, I should say. Thousands and thousands of animals are killed each year, and they have no shame in asking for more money. The government's response is, get through the humane societies and work with them to eradicate animals, and then they have the other hand is to, in one hand is a bag of poison that they want to spray from the air and kill animals. And so then to make matters worse, to say, oh, it's cats now killing monk seals and dolphins, and because of the toxoplasmosis. So there's just one big lie, and the bottom line is this. Everybody has something in mind, and that's called a grant. The scientists that are, they don't aggressively fight and kick and scream to the developers. They don't fight and say and be honest and call up my show, for example, and say, the city and county of Honolulu, for example, is contaminating the water. That may cause some, or contribute to the decline in quality of life and impact the dolphins and the monk seals and the turtles. And that may cause herpes, who knows, on the turtles. So there is this giant lie, and it's an industry that has been created. And in some instances, some of these facilities are situated on properties that are owned by the city and county of Honolulu, for example. And they get a dollar for 99 years or some ridiculous amount. And then we're still stuck with seeing these animals that are being dumped. They didn't choose to be out in the parks. They didn't choose to be in the ditches and in the culverts. But we, as irresponsible human beings, dump them. We are reckless. And so at the end of the day, just think, we got blood on our hands. And I don't mean that from a crying to you because I've become weak at the knees and irrational. These are living beings. You can see what you want, but if you've ever owned a pet or been near one, or I'm sure all of you know someone that have had a four-legged, quote, friend or critter that there was a special bond. they, you look at them, they got eyelashes, they got eyes, they got lips, they got tongue, they got desire, they got all of that, the desire to live. That's why they breed. They want to perpetuate themselves and sustain themselves. We are struggling with ethics here. And the ethics is, the problem isn't going to go away. And all of you scientists out there that claim to be scientists, I'm seeing it now, you can get a PhD and call yourself anything, but if you got no ethics and values, and then you dismiss the people on the other end that's out there feeding cats, trapping and neuter, and you bitch at them for being causing problems. But you don't look inward and look at yourselves and being honest with the government agencies and the managers of those agencies who take the money and squander it. And at the end of the year, hey, we got lots of money here. You got a Christmas list? You got a wish list? Meantime, animals are dying by the thousands because we're putting them down, euthanizing them. We're taking them to the incinerator and burning them. And something have to give. It has to give. And if you don't like what I'm saying, and by the way, the Humane Society is out there. If you're inclined to call, you're more than welcome. We'll give you equal time, and that's my invitation. But as it stands, generally you run and hide. So, and I don't blame you. If I was doing what you were doing, I'd hide too. I'd just cash the check and do my little fundraisers and chocolate-covered cookies and tuxedos and walk parks and bark parks. In the meantime, death is amongst us just by the thousands. Thousands and thousands of animals annually. And we boast about having a new bark park. Not to dismiss the bark parks. But folks, we're talking about life being snuffed out. Just as simple as that. They look different from us. They got a tail that waggles when you rub their head. But to gas them, to euthanize them, because we're lazy and because our scientists and our managers are just irresponsible, doesn't say much for us. We need to clean this thing up. And my suggestion to any of you out there, just yesterday, a friend of mine called and said, I have this cat, he or she is only able to move his front legs and drag itself. And knowing that that animal would be euthanized. But it's the smaller organizations and the individuals out there, like Dr. Jill Vokes, Cat Bird Friends, Petmobile, who I phone, call, and she in turn received the animal, examined it, and now is feeling that it may be rescuable and it may have some injuries sustained for life, but at least it gets a chance. Now, I know some of you, man, well, just snuff it. Well, it don't work that way. Some of us have a heart and have a vision that we can do better. So my recommendation to any of you out there, let's stay away from the big boys and funding them. Give your donations to a local group. Find a local group. Give the money. At Costco, you're buying for $17 for a bag of cat food that... I know some of you say you shouldn't be feeding the cats, but I'm going to tell you, the cat's going to be there no matter what you say, because your neighbors and your friends are involved in reckless behavior and disrespecting life itself. And some of your neighbors will capture your cat, trap it, and transport it to the park and release it. So all of those things, and I'm not begging with you, but if you like blood on your hands, go for it. Stay in this role, and every year watch the chocolate-coated factory and the fundraisers, and I say good for you. But if you really care and you want to put a stop or a dent in this change of mindset, it's serious, folks. And it's the animals didn't put themselves there. Humans put them there. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comments.
I'm Sheila Young.
All righty, Sheila. All right, from Kauai.
Yes, and I was listening in, and I also want to be a little bit of I want to show a different side to what you were saying. I agree with you, but I also see other things that are going on in the community. There are many people in the community that have taken in animals out of the goodness of their heart, unable to even afford the vets, afford the care that is needed for these animals that they take in.
and they provide housing and safety and care for them all around the island, because our island knows if they don't, they will be killed. And these people have great hearts, and they are not being paid one penny for this. And I think that what you tapped in on is such a great thing about, you know, people, let's turn our donations to these people that are really doing some good work out of the honesty of their hearts and really caring about animals. And let's dry out the Humane Society, keep telling the truth, stand as a community, and eventually get a no-kill contract in there and change things for the benefits of our community and the animals. A lot of people have suffered. No, in fact, you know, one of the things I have the hardest time with, I have cried, I can't tell you how many tears, is driving in the canyons in Hyena and all around, and I see constantly lost hunting dogs at night, and they're running around, you know, going nuts trying to find their owners. And, you know, in the past, before I knew all of this, I would take those animals and I would take them to my home, or I would take them to a location where I knew they were safe, and then take them to the Humane Society. And now, after, you know, all these red flags throughout the years and the information that we're all finding out right now together, I just leave them. I leave mm-hmm. them because they stand more of a chance of finding their owners or having somebody take them into their own homes than they do getting picked up and put in the Humane Society for death, because that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is a lot of people in the community. I think each of our communities needs to tap in with the, who those individuals are that are doing these wonderful things and fund them.
Mm-hmm. And not be dictating that you can't feed here, can't do this, you can't do that. In the meantime, these animals are not going away because humans on a daily basis are introducing more animals, and they're having fundraisers, and this money isn't seeing those animals on the street.
Oh, also, one other thing. A major, major, major problem is, and what I saw clearly last night, I have never in my life seen so many cops, because they got alerted of the picketing. They were everywhere, and I saw a bunch of my team players cruising around, but the cops use intimidation, not only, you know, to stand publicly, which is our right to prevent mm-hmm. that, but they also go into homes and take animals, and they show up with their, you know, badges and their this and their that, and they're backed by the county.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of intimidation out there, and this is another serious reason why people in the community want to stay away from anything to do with the Humane Society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it needs to be rethinking it over again, because we have this wedding that took place gone way back. And some of the elitists, oh, we have wine and cookies and cheese and champagne on our fundraisers. And, oh, Carol Cox gave $6,000, or he gave $100,000. He donated land. We have a situation here where there's a new, out in the West Kapolei side there, there's a Humane Society got land somehow in the deal that, and then we have at the facility here at the quarantine, they have land there. And then we have the city. And it seems there's a monopoly in this city and county of Honolulu, but you can't approach these guys, and they find their way at PetSmart and Pet Not So Smart, whatever those shops are, and they adopt a few animals out. But I'm here to tell you, the real soldiers that are fighting and causing a reduction in suffering of animals is the people that are out there in the trap, neuter, release, because of what trap, neuter, release to Humane Society seem to be. It appears, in my opinion, that it's, well, bring him in, we'll release him from his spirit, from his physical body in an instant. You go into their facilities, you don't see the amount of space that should be available for adopted cats. You don't see that, right? You don't see the educational programs that should be really aggressive.
No, what you see when you go in there, in fact, I went in there for the first time, and I had an interesting very first meeting after I've had certain dealings with Penny Sestaro. I met her for the first time, And that was very interesting. But when you first walk in there, which I hadn't for years, that was the first time a couple months ago, oh, it looks so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
You go about down the kennels, and there's all these beautiful dogs, healthy, and, you know, there's a lot of activity and people in there with the animals. It looks, they have this facade to create an image of caring about the animals. But I remember distinctly, and I have a television show that states they do kill animals. I also, on that same show, they also state that over or at least half of the dogs they take in are hunting dogs. And a few other incriminating things on that television show. And so they create these facades and they do this and that. But behind this one door, this one day when I happened to open the door and somebody reprimanded me very strongly, I remember going, wow, that was weird. And I got a glimpse of what was on the other side of that door. And what I saw was a bunch of hunting dogs and some other dogs that looked, you know, like they needed to rest and be cared for. And behind that door was where I later learned is the dogs that are getting ready to be killed. I don't call it euthanization because if you look up euthanization in the dictionary, it states for it's a purpose that is used for, you know, terminal cases and severe cases where, mm-hmm. you know, they probably aren't going to get better. But so what I call it is darn right murder and killing. And that's what they're doing where you see the smokestack. There's a smokestack behind there. They're burning animals. I've also heard from a reliable source that they take them to dump places and dump them in different locations. So this is stuff that's behind the scenes going on in front, after, behind the scenes of the pretty. You know what I mean? It's a bunch of crap, and it's a facade for the public to buy into, and it's not real. What's real is what's going on behind the scenes that we are now finding out about and sharing as well. I am learning simultaneously with everybody else that's listening and sharing this information because I don't know, because that's just what's happening, so I'm doing it.
Yeah, well, there is a fraud being perpetrated on the people, and that send more money and what have you, but I'm here to tell you, people get upset, and there's many debating about pig hunting and the dog use and what have you, and it's cruel and what have you, but I see a little bit of ethnocentrism here in that they focus on Hawaii, and I like to see all death to animals just disappear in my lifetime, but I don't dictate the ways of the world. So, but what I can say here, when people use dogs, we get upset and we get and how cruel. And then when they get lost, they can't contain their dogs. But if you go to Kentucky, Kansas, other mainland states, Canada, wherever, and people that hunt raccoon or whatever with dogs, their dogs are often lost, get strayed, and keep chasing false tracks or what have you. And the hunter has to leave that animal out there. And just to give you an idea, each hunter knows that if you just take your shirt and lay it down where you were, and that dog will come back to that shirt. And then when you come back looking for him, you don't have to go chase around the countryside. Just
lay your head. And they're also removing dogs from hunting sites that are legal. And people are, you know, tourists that are walking around or whatever, they're taking the dogs out of these legal hunting zones where the animals are waiting for their owners to come back, not understanding the ways of the hunters and why we really need these hunters. Thank God for them, because honestly, the devastation that would be happening to the environment and to people's homes would be unbelievable if we didn't have some kind of control. But also the wonderful thing is, this has been going on for over 150 years, and it provides food for families. It doesn't go to waste, and for luaus and parties, and you know, it's a balanced thing for the people, for the local people, and for the environment. And people need to understand that, which they don't. They come here and they go, "Oh, this is all cool," without understanding what's really going on. They make judgments, and that we need more education.
They say don't use the dogs to hunt, but then this is what the feds say in the states. Well, we got, you know, if you were to stamp out pig hunting with dogs or what have you, a pig hunting period, guess what the solution is? They're not going to stop breeding, and they're not going to stop rooting up trees and plants and hunting and whatever.
No, what I think
they want to go and poison them, or snare them,
and
kill them.
What I would like to see happen is with this new turnover is that we create a specific division within our community dealing with our specific issues, which we have hunters and we have hunting dogs. I would love to work with the hunters and the hunting dogs, or have a program for them in this new facility dealing with their specific issues and helping them by going on site and doing controlled breeding, because a lot of these hunters have dogs that are worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
And these dogs are skilled dogs. And so we need to do more controlled breeding and go on site, do these spayed and neuter at each hunting facility, giving them whatever they need to, and you know, make their kennels nice, give them, they need food, whatever they need for help to help the population. Because yes, indeed, most of the dogs in the Humane Society are hunting dogs and puppies.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that get euthanized. So the solution would be to go on site, spay and neuter, work with the hunters on getting the dogs that they want to breed bred, and the ones that they don't, spayed and neutered. And, you know, that will cut down a lot of the problems. There's solutions for everything.
Yeah, we want to figure out every solution for them. I want to adhere to this vein of the falsities that are being stated, and the representation that everything's fine, and we're seeing them snuffing out animals by the thousands. That I'd like to speak to and continue to drive that home, because as far as the actual mechanics and all of the intimacy of what we do to do this and do that, I just think that get rid of the lie that's being perpetrated. Just blast that out of the way, and then we can...
Yeah, and I also think it's important that people know, we're releasing the lies now, we're getting the community educated, but that there is a solution, and we have someone coming to help us, and that feels good, I think it feels good to a lot of other people to know that there are solutions, and the more we focus on those, then the faster we're going to get there, in my opinion,
Right, you know how to feed a baby?
How?
Baby food, one spoon at a time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Don't just throw it in the whole jar and say, drink up.
And you know what? I want to thank you so very, very much. Everything you're saying is so from the heart and full of aloha. And I love you. I don't know you, but I love you. And thank you so, so much.
Okay, well, thank you so much, too. And keep up the fight. Just remember that every little eye that blinks, that's an animal to many of us, but it's a life to all of us. You know, it's just a matter of how we respect it. You know.
Amen. Amen to that.
Okay, there's someone else on. Let me get back to them and
okay,
thank you.
Aloha.
Caller, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comments. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm so sad that I couldn't talk to the lady.
Well, you still can.
She's listening. I hope.
Of course. Everybody listen to the Carol Cox Show. What kind of question is that?
I mean, she hung up. I wanted to talk to her directly if it was possible.
Go ahead, and she'll probably call you back.
Okay. I'm a farmer, and I have a farm, and I get stray dogs that come onto my place, and, you know, I try to capture them. But like the lady was saying, don't capture some of these wild dogs, these hunting dogs. I did that for a number of years, and then, you know, it came back to bite me.
Literally, you mean...
No, just by carrying on that policy, it came back to bite me. I mean, and it hurt me because, listen to me, I love animals, and I really love dogs. Because they're man's best friend, and you can't deny it. But one day, I'm doing my work, and I see this pit bull come around by one of my lychee trees. And he was like, man, that's the reddest pit bull I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, I went up to approach him, you know, and he ran away. So I followed him, and this would be one of the most gruesome things that I have to say, but it has to be said. There was two of them. The other dog was on top of a pony that I was keeping for a friend of mine. Literally, sir, he had eaten through his head already and was eating his brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And so then I went bananas, right? So I ran back to the house, got a baseball bat, and I approached the dog. I was going to, you know, do some damage because I was just...
Mm-hmm.
It kind of turned on me.
Mm-hmm.
And he came at me, and I go, wait a minute, there's two of them here. And they were real skinny. You know, they had killed the horse for food. There was no doubt about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there were two hunting dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't do anything. So I went and called the police, and they came. And another guy came, because I called some other guy to come down, because I know he had a rifle, a gun. I would have killed him, you know what I mean, because they were dangerous already. So and he came down, he had the gun, and then he saw the dog, and this is no lie. The one dog came up to him, started licking his arm, and, you know, was all friendly, and the other dog was over there still eating the horses into his head. And, I was just furious. But it goes to the point where the lady said, these dogs are loved by hunters, right? And if they do a dirty deed, they forgive them. But I couldn't forgive him because I had custody of the horse, you know, and he was tied up. If he wasn't tied up, he was on like a 80-foot run.
Mm-hmm.
He would run back and forth. But he never made a sound, and I was, you know, maybe 100 feet away from this activity, 150 feet at the max.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the police finally came. The Humane Society came, and they took him away, and they probably euphemized him because they were dangerous dogs. They didn't just kill an animal.
Well, let me interfere with you for a moment here, that thing. You saw the news recently where the 15-year-old boys went in and choked out the senior citizen, the old lady running the store?
Oh, that's terrible.
See, it happens everywhere, huh?
Oh, just evil stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not evil. I mean, so, but again, you address each situation on its own merits, and that's a sad occasion there, and it happens. But I would say the bigger problem is that we need to have people... When we have dogs like this or this incident, we need to have a viable program and a responsible entity that has these contracts to deal with them, right? I mean, unfortunate.
I'm also letting the dogs out.
I mean, I feel sorry for the pony just hearing that story, but on the other hand, it doesn't get me any closer to disagreeing or agreeing. It's just that my concerns is that there is an increase in population of animals on the island due to laziness and falsehoods being perpetrated by the state agencies, the county agencies, the city. They throw a few dollars here and there and say, oh, it's taken care of, right? It's like giving your nanny enough money to make sure you take your kids to the movie and keep them busy, but then when they grow up, they're dumb as a rock,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's no education.
Right.
To pay for. But my concern with what the woman had said, if you see these wild dogs, don't capture them. That's the part that turned me off.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's something I wouldn't advocate.
There's two of them, or three of them like that. They're loose. They're dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And having ate properly for maybe a month. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've been scrounging around for a mongoose or being really nourished.
But the discussion is more. There's always going to be that situation. I was over in Kalailoa side about a month ago, and I'm walking through the weeds looking for something, and up pops six strays, dogs, right? And then they're looking at me like, well, gee, he's pretty hefty there. We could eat, have a 3-day meal out of him.
Really?
You know, but again, I don't welcome that sight and hope no one experience that. But again, the subject that I'm trying to flesh out is that those situations won't present themselves if we had adequate and honest treatment of animals and the handling and the management of pets and all of that, right? And the thing is, we're bleeding money. No one can say we're in throwing money at them.
Yeah, it's not proper to the education that they take. My thing is this. The owners of any animal has a responsibility, no matter what. They neuter the animal, number one, if they're not going to breed it. Number two, they have to have a collar on them so they can find them,
mm-hmm.
some way, shape, or form. They have to be responsible,
right.
totally and completely. Otherwise, do not get an animal that you cannot take care of properly.
But
I don't care. Hurt your heart that I can't have this, then that to the child, this, mm-hmm. that, and the other.
Well, what happens is that, you know, you could have a humane society that works, or organizations, or with contractual purposes to work on programs to do just that, managing and being honest about it, but not snatching the dogs up and then the person got to fight to get them back. And, yeah, no one, I don't ever, one of my greatest nightmares is I wake up on many occasions being bitten by a dog. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's reality. But I still haven't experienced that, and experience even now. I don't believe that they should be subjected to the mass killing and gassing.
It's irresponsible, you know, but you got to get back to the source, like I was saying. The owners are 90% of the problem. And the other thing, you know, I've been to the Humane Society with a friend of mine. He adopted a dog. Another friend of mine adopted. They turned out real good. No problem. And I went down there with clean facility. The animals were well presented and whatever. You know what I mean? I think they're doing their job, but they're overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's part of the problem, too.
Well, going back to the politics, and that's what it is, here, certain people can get certain special favors from city councils and what have you. And it's, believe it or not, it brings good fame and recognition if you remember a big donor and you get to go to the board and have champagne and eat chocolate candy and the tuxedos. I still can't bring myself to understanding what's so fancy about that when if you were to just turn the next page and realize you go into the parks, you go into Hawaii Kai, you go into many places and there's strays and cats that are out there. They didn't get there because they chose to move from home.
Yeah.
It's the irresponsibility. Right, somebody dropped them off, right? I mean...
and no return.
Yeah, I mean, someone says, well, how do you know that... you know, Fluffy was owned by someone. Well, you try giving Fluffy some dried cat food and look at him. He look at you like, what? Where's the chicken?
Yeah.
You know, then you know that Fluffy was owned by somebody.
Yeah, somebody else, right.
I mean, pampered. Yeah, I mean, he's been pampered. And when he rubs your leg and say, look, I don't like these birds in my hair, man. I don't like this. It's, when it rains, I want to be... And they're making their way to your car, following you home. You follow? That tells you some human behavior.
Connection at one time.
Yeah. And that tells you we need to, if we were to address that factor, and that factor alone, we could probably make a major accomplishment in reducing the population. But it's so disjointed. As I've said earlier, the feds, they say kill it because we need more money for alien species, right? And these animals are threatening our wildlife. And then the state comes, yeah, we agree, give us some of their money too. And then, you know, and it goes on and on.
The wildlife thing is all BS because most of the wild animals, if they catch anything, it's a wounded animal or one that's going to die anyway. You know what I mean? That it's disabled.
And
animals can outsmart a dog, the birds and stuff like that.
But most of the so-called scientists, and I'm careful to say what a scientist is in this state, because, you know, you could go off to get a degree at Sears and Roebuck, and if they like you, and if you're not brown-skinned from Kansas, you ain't getting no job any damn way. You know, it's all the kids from Massachusetts and New Hampshire and places like that with blonde hair that can get these jobs. And so it's the whole thing is just chocked full of just conflict and illnesses and sicknesses. And they won't address it. And so what's the next solution? Hey, we want to drop poison from the sky. and kill every damn thing, you know, and that way, right?
Indiscriminate.
Yeah, but we guarantee you it's not going to kill this, and, you know, it's like, wow, you guys are so full of it, you should try drinking some of your own poison.
Fools would believe that.
Yeah, and you've been here for a while. Remember the owls, for example, the quails in the sugarcane fields?
Man.
You'd find them sitting on the side of the road bleeding at the nostril because they've eaten indirectly, secondarily or tertiarily, where they've ingested a mouse or a rat that had ingested warfarin, the sugarcane poison that they put it sprayed in the field, the pellets, right? And the state has a study on that now. They
eat the dead rat that has the poison still in them.
Yeah, and
kill them because I had the native owl. There was one up there for a number of years, and when I used to go in the mountains, I'd always see him,
mm-hmm.
always. Then one day I came, and he was dead on the ground. And I'm going, hey, he ate a rat that had poisoned,
Mm-hmm.
And I got a barn owl. That's been here like over 20 some years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they bring him here. But he's a big old bugger, man. I mean, he's got like a 3-foot wingspan. And about every month and a half, 2 months, I see him. He flies by my place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he's just like my friend. And I'm going, when's there somebody going to shoot this guy?
At that age, he probably nice and light colored, huh?
Yeah, he's like a white brown.
Right.
Man, real light, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know what he is. Don't worry, man. He's like part of the scenery now.
But see, this is the hypocrisy. Our government agencies, they don't give a damn about life and what the when it comes to animals and managing them the proper way. They tell you the lie, well, they threaten endangered species. Yes, they do. But they don't threaten them no more than the building you just allowed to be built, right?
A bigger culprit than any owl.
And then we introduce the owl here.
Yeah,
so, barn owl.
Yeah, the barn owl.
Albus, whatever. I can't, my science is a little backwards. Right. But anyway, that practice alone, and so now all of a sudden, well, we want to just spray poison everywhere, and, you know those people that are feeding the cats out there? We should arrest them. And then, Humane Society has a spay neuter trap release and they're not, it's so cumbersome and does not complement these people. So the whole thing is chaos and the state and the feds are successful in fooling the public by demonizing the people that feed the cats and then trap neuter, right? Instead of saying, well, if you're willing to spend your time, I wouldn't do it. We don't do it and it's our job. But you're doing it, how can we make it convenient for you, right? But instead, we're going to harass them and leave the cats there. Chase them out of the park, the Kihei Lagoon. What a rat hole anyway. They've got pollutions and oil and gas in the water and in the ground and pollution, and they ain't protecting it. But they say, you got to stop feeding the cats because that's an environmental problem.
Yeah. They got their priorities all A backwards, you know what I mean? And there's no doubt about it. You know, I feel for the animals, but the people either they have to keep them in the house, neuter them, but they are the main person that will control a lot of these problems is the owners.
Yeah. And some of the things you can do, if you have your dogs out there and you, even your pet dogs that won't kill a donkey or a cow or a pig or a pony, put a muzzle on them if you insist on letting them walk around freely, you know?
I had 5 dogs, sir, and my animals never killed anything. They never left my farm. I perimeter trained them. They go off on the road. As soon as I see them, they get punished, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it only took a couple punishments before they go, that's off limits.
Well, you know, you can tell a lot about dogs, and when you see them, you go up to a farmhouse, and they're laying around tired. That means they've spent the entire night chasing something, right? So if we become better stewards of and owners and protecting and also managing them, some of you that own cats that insist on them being outdoors, put a bell around in that one that breaks freely.
My dogs never roam. Once you teach them, they won't roam.
But, you know, they are all likely to do something, But
there's a possibility. But
yeah.
If you have a leader of the pack, I had $5 at one time, three females and two males, all from the same litter. And, like, there was an alpha male, alpha female. And they kind of, you know, broke up the fights, you know what I mean, among themselves and stuff. And they, you know, they never killed each other, you know what I mean. They got in beefs.
Mm-hmm.
But Nanini kind. Animals will take care if you give them the opportunity. I mean, most animals that are stuck in a house or a backyard, they can get a little psychotic, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Stir crazy.
Yeah, exactly, you know what I mean. Mine had free run of, you know, 5 acres, you know, and they could do what they wanted.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saddened by when we look at the thousands and thousands of dollars and millions, actually, that is just flowing through our hands and given
that
to a special.
Rattle, and he's doing too much or nothing for the animals.
Yeah. Hold on here. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, what's your.
Hello? See, now, that's the other part of the conversation. We need to control humans, too, you know.
Yeah.
The pop.
Great surgery, you know.
Give that kid a toy if he got nothing better to do.
Really.
You can call back. I maybe he was being funny or...
Well, you know what? I'll get off so he can talk and express his opinion.
Yeah, you know, and I thank you for calling in and chatting.
Yeah, I just
wanted
to give that testimonial because, you know, the animals, I care for them all, even the cats. I mean, I used to have a lot of cats, but once you get to dogs, they're hard to teach them not to kill cats. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I had them, they'd maul them, but they'd never killed them.
Mm-hmm.
They'd carry them around, and the cat knew to stop fighting, you know what I mean? Because the more they fight, the more the dog wants to bite them.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different show.
But right now, we
want to talk about the humans and the cats.
Yeah, human is the problem.
The cat scratch fever that they...
Yeah, really.
Okay, well, thank you, Bob.
Okay, Carol, you take care. Have a good week.
All right, take care. Now, the whining and crying about this is, some of you say, well, what's the big deal? I think that, you know, and I keep to myself spiritually in what I believe. I don't project it on anyone, but I don't believe I'm crossing the line of taking it too far when I suggest that let's look at these animals. And me personally, I grew up in Mississippi, and you learn to hunt, and you learn to fish, and they tell you that it was to put food on the table, and that was true in many instances, but still today, yet me personally, I'm having trouble, and I'm glad that I'm having this trouble, because when you're taking a gun and going out and shooting something, I'm going to be very honest with you, it's a lie that it's all about food. It's about a degree of recreation involved in there, too. You grow up and you learn, and then it becomes something of pleasure to hunt. And those of you that won't admit that, you're just a lie, and there's no help for you. But as I get older, I dread, and I wake up at times just thinking about individual instances, not because the Humane Society or anybody freaked me out and got into my head and spinning around. It's just that as an individual, a human being who claims to be educated, you come to terms with all of this. And when you kill something, there were times I would go end up pigeon hunting, bantail pigeon hunting. This is a given day. I would bantail pigeon hunt. Or I would go deer hunting. Get a deer, go bantail pigeon hunt, then leave there and go fishing. Because the claim was we were doing all this to gather food for this table. But then thinking, well, you had a gun, you had the ammunition, you had gas, and now why don't you just stop at Safeway or whatever, the grocery store, and get something if you're inclined to eat meat. So a lot of it is a fallacy. And for me, I'm trying to reconcile with everything because life is life, whether it looks different from us, and that goes whether it's black or white or blonde or blue eyes or what have you, or furry and a bushy tail, whatever, four legs, and or you don't speak human language, but you're still life. And man, when you grow up and you've been taught one thing and you learn, wow, you learn the value. And that's what this is about. It's not about all about spay, neuter, trap, release. It's about let's learn the value of life. Let's appreciate those two little eyes that look at you and want to lick your hand or want to hop in your lap. And that's enough to say we need to do something. Just that alone, that conversation there between you and that animal. So I know it's sounding real soft today, but that's the way it is. Caller, thank you. Go ahead. Hello? Paula, go ahead with the comments. Anyway, that's the preaching, and I'm sure there's some of you spiritual. I've heard about the Buddhists, and I've read about the Buddhists, and I've read about the Hindu and all, but the problem is, what can we do with where we are? How can we use our influences to make things a little bit better? And when you see someone dump a litter of cats and they're starving, you can see their ribs and you can see their bones and they can't move and they're barely breathing. And we got to debate whether we should care or not care. Caller, go ahead. Thank you.
Aloha, Mr. Cox. This is Anna again calling from the Big Island.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to also comment on the speaker before you, and I think it's really important that when we talk about euthanizing and the things that you're saying now, you know, the heart of it, that all life should be respected. One of the ways that the Humane Society gets away with doing what they're doing is the constant blaming of the public.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to just be really careful that we don't fall, or the community doesn't fall into the trap of feeling that it's the guy next door or it's the people across the street. And because it's out of our control, we can't control what they're doing. It's hopeless and there's nothing we can do. When it comes to killing an animal, an innocent animal, it's the Humane Society that's doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's where the issue is, and that's what has to stop. And they have the power. They have the programs. They have the money to stop now. It's not something we have to do next year or 2 years. We don't need a plan. It can stop today.
Yep, I agree. Well, thank you. And keep us in touch and let us know what's going on with these new developments. If you, I'm going to look at that law, too, to see if they're written in to do the job. And maybe you guys could change that law.
I know on our island it's not written into our law. The
okay.
problem we have with other people being able to bid on the contract, and we've had other people that have tried to bid on the contract, it is, as I said, it's because it's really tailored for them.
Mm.
They own the facility in Kea'au, and soon their fundraising that they're doing now is to build their legacy building in Kona, and then we'll real be stuck with them more than we are now because then they'll own two of the facilities.
Well, I heard maybe you should try using your P cards and give it to the mayor and that might get you some insight.
If I would have had the P card, I would have spent the money a lot better.
Not, you know, this, not one bag of cat food. I think he should go to prison for life. No.
I'll let him know that you said that.
Just kidding. Now we all make mistakes, but not that many.
No, and not for that long,
for sure. All righty. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
Aloha.
Thank you for everything.
All right.
Aloha.
Carla, go ahead with your comment. Well, anyway, we're closing down on the last minute. So, Carla, I cut you off. If you have a real quick, you can call back. But somehow, anyway, I'm going to share with you next week. I'm hoping to put everything together here. And for the guy that loves to call up and talk about Black Lives Matter and they don't matter and what have you, I wanted to share a little story. Some of you saw it in the news where the 62 years after Brown versus BOE, court orders schools to desegregate. Those schools are, one of those schools is actually the school that I attended in Mississippi, several of them actually. And so here it is, 2016, and for those of you out there that want to know why things are so disproportionate and why the black man always has a chip on his shoulder, go read that, and CNN did a story on it, May 17th, and the title is 62 Years After Brown versus BOE Court Orders School Desegregation. So it's not something we presented. It's just something we have to navigate through every damn day of our life. And unless you come to terms with that it's a reality, we have no discussion. Carla, go ahead, real quick.
Yeah, man, what's Hillary Clinton going to do for the blacks in the ghetto, Carol?
The same thing she did, that Bill did. You notice she had, when Bill had, what was it, Vernon Jordan to go up and check out the jobs for Monica?
Yeah.
And then had the secretary to hide the stained dress under the bed. That's what the Clintons think about black people.
Yeah, they got nothing, right? Man. We're screwed.
Yeah, we're screwed. But ask yourself that. Everybody talk about Hillary and Billy. And he was the first black president. But look who was in his cabinet. Did he bother to appoint anybody of significance? Ron Johnson,
nobody,
I think.
Nobody, man. Nobody. Right. Hey, look at what we got now. We got an Uncle Tom.
Well,
he does nothing for the black community either, brother.
When did Trump become Uncle Tom?
Oh, boy, I'm talking about the guy that's currently there.
Oh, man, that's a low blow, bro. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, okay,
yeah,
brother.
Thank you. Aloha. Yeah, man, that's the way it is, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining, and I'll talk to you next week. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.